This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody, Jason here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, and welcome to part two of my conversation with Miss Nalani Gruhl. So if you didn't catch it, make sure to check out part one. It was our conversation, mostly focused on authenticity. Then I kind of got into the sales stuff and questions, and I can't, anyone who knows me just knows I can't help myself. I just get excited. But so that you know the background, if you didn't catch that first part, Nalani was a student at University of Houston. She then went into the sales program there. She was on the staff. She was working with the students. She became a staff in the marketing department and promoting it, working with the Sales Excellence Institute. And then she graduated and went to work for a company that she actually sold to as part of the program. And so now she's at Starburst Data as an SDR. And so she's had this interesting, fun journey of not thinking about business to getting into sales because it sounds really scary, to excelling at it, to getting out there in the real world doing it, and that whole journey from the student and then the staff side. So again, make sure to check out part one. We're here to talk about persuasion in part two. Nalani, are you ready for the second conversation?
I'm ready for part two. Let's do it.
All right. So like I said, I jumped the gun. It's just what I do. I get excited. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was asking questions that process. But let's start with this. Is so far in your experience, is there any favorite sales process? Any, I don't want to say strategy because that sounds almost on the edge of gross, but like anything that you do or that you've found so far that you like when dealing with someone in that sales process? It's probably around your questions and everything you talked about, but like, is there a process that you like most?
I think I'm still figuring it out, to be honest. One of the things we talk a lot about at my company are like the three I's: you imitate, iterate, innovate. And so I feel like I spent a lot of the first part of my time here imitating a lot of what everybody else is doing, which is a great place to start because you're building that foundation and figuring out what that process should look like for you. And it will be a little bit different for everybody else. And that's part of owning your own authenticity and sales. And I've been in the iterating. So I'm like building out like kind of my own versions of everything. And I feel like I'm close to hitting that innovating where I can start building out like some new exciting ideas and stuff. Not there yet, but some things I'd say like are my favorite is like 100%. Like I love researching like a company and I love researching people prior. I love like adding personalization and having fun with prospecting and reaching out, because the more fun I have, the more excited I am when I reach out, the more it shows to you, the more excited you get. And it kind of like bleeds in together. And I think that also goes back to a little bit of like the authenticity piece. Like I always want to showcase my personality because I think that bodes more well for like people like getting to know me, getting to like me, building that trust and eventually hopefully buying from me someday.
And this would probably be in the future of sales / automation side. There's always this tendency. I see so many companies, even myself, just want to automate things, have work in the background. And then there's that balance with personalization. Nothing drives me more crazy than automation with terrible personalization or automated emails trying to get me to buy something where it's like, dear company name, right? Dear Cutter Consulting, you know, let's talk about your lead gen. It's like, that's not going to work. So I love the fact that you want to bring in who you are, put that energy, because I agree. I think when that energy is there from your side, it does come through. I mean, obviously not 100% of the people are going to respond, but the right people will resonate with it.
Absolutely. And I think also like sales is a hard job, especially when you're doing like a lot of cold outreach, cold calling and stuff. And it keeps it a lot more fun for you too. And keeps you a lot more motivated when you are yourself versus feeling like you have to come and show up as somebody else.
So from an iteration standpoint, because we're talking about persuasion, which is the sales process, it's the actually focused on moving someone towards a close, right? Whether it's setting an appointment or actually signing the agreement that you slid across the table. With that, with iteration, where is that balance that you've found, or what's the direction that you've been told? Because if I'm running a company and I had 50 SDRs and all of them are doing their own thing, I don't know what's working if something does work, and B, how do I even manage that from like a company perspective. So where is that boundary for you where they've said, here, you can add these things, but also don't change these things?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that is like a fine line and it's something that we do talk about a lot. We have our first, like our baseline sales process that we use. So besides like the cold outreach and everything I do, like our actual sales process, we do use command of message at my current company. And when I was in the sales program, we taught spin selling. So you always have a baseline that you're going to stick to. And there's like a full process within there. They give you a lot of ideas on questions you could be asking, or on like how to draw like pain, or how to implicate on what that means if it's not solved, or all these different things. But I think where like being able to put your own personality in it is the way that you say things and the way that you ask things and the active listening that you do, and how you mirror somebody when you're having that conversation. And then throughout like the process, like iterating, like learning what's working for you and what's not, it's not going to work for the person next to you. Like I'm a very amiable, like expressive kind of person, like very soft-spoken. I like to be gentle in the way that I say things. And that's just who I am as a person. But I remember in the sales program, they would always try and get me to be a little bit more driver, like try and close a little bit more hard. And I tried to do it one time as I was practicing with one of the professors, and she stopped me and started laughing. And I was like, what? And she was like, Nalani, you flinched. And I was like, what? She's like, you physically flinched when you asked me to do the deal. You moved away from me. And I was like, oof. Okay. I didn't do that. And she's like, yes, you did. And I was like, okay, fine. Maybe I did. And that was just like, us trying to figure out like, okay, that's not going to work for you. So how can you ask someone for their business without feeling like you physically have to move away from them? And I learned, like, I'm not going to be a person that's like direct, like, hey, like, are you going to sign? I could never do that. It would never sound like me, but I can ask them like, hey, like, you know, I'd love for you to start seeing that value today. Are you going to sign up today, or, you know, whatever that may be. So I think that comes into like the iterating, is finding your own process and what works for you. And that's 1,000 different things in it, but it's fun.
So let's talk about that, because it's both the authenticity and the persuasion piece. Is why did that feel so wrong to you with that direct ask?
Yeah, I really am like, I like the value that I bring. And to me, the direct ask doesn't highlight that value at the end. It's just like very like, almost to me in my eyes, the scammy cars person, or at least how I associate it. And that's not true for everybody. There are really awesome sellers who genuinely do care, who can be more direct because that's their personality style. And it feels really authentic to them. But to me, it didn't feel authentic. And I couldn't make it sound authentic. And the moment I tried to, you could see right through me. And so that's when I knew I had to pivot and be like, okay, like how can I tie that value back at the end and then ask for the business? Because that makes me feel comfortable. It makes me feel like I'm showing like, hey, this is what I've come to realize almost at the end, if that makes sense.
It does. Well, and it's interesting because my experience has been, if you're a true professional who's done your job leading up to that moment of moving the sale to the sale, then you actually don't need to ask, because if you've earned permission to close, then you can just close, yes. Right? The doctor earns the permission to tell you you need surgery. They don't ask you if you'd like surgery today to fix your broken arm, right? Like they just assume they did their professional duty. They know what's best. You've agreed. Now it's time to go. So I think your reaction is more proper from a selling, value selling, consultative, empathetic sales process, instead of just hitting someone in the face with the ask and, you know, wanting to move them forward, which is fascinating, because then it makes me think of the next question I have for you, which is, where is that line with manipulating versus persuasion? Like when you hear persuasion, you think of the stuff about sales that you don't like on the manipulation side. Like, where is that line? Where did you think that line was? Where do you see that line now? And what have you come to realize like works and doesn't work?
Yeah, I'm like a very naturally by nature soft-spoken person. So before the sales program, before I got into sales or anything, I thought that line was like very far. like I almost always thought that most salespeople were going to be like that. And And I don't think I had a really good baseline for where that line would be at all. Now that I did the sales program and they taught me about like the value of selling and how much goes into the process of it. And it shouldn't just be like a quick transactional thing. It should be a lot of questions. You should have a good idea of where they're struggling, what problems they have, if your solution actually aligns. Now I feel like I have a better understanding of where that line actually is. And to me, I think it comes down to like transparency, like honesty and like yourself and with them. Like, is your product actually the right solution? It's not always going to be a fit. And I think that's one of the things that I felt like I didn't think that every company was going to be able to understand that. Like, it was always going to be like the deal comes first kind of thing. And I can't feel comfortable doing that. I think that's when you get into sleazy sales. So to me, it's knowing that I have the power to step away if it's never going to, if it's not going to provide that value. But being able to be persuasive is knowing how do I uncover the value and how do I help my customers see that? And that's where persuasion comes in. So I think that those are going to be the two big differences for me.
And it's so fascinating to hear you speak about it. And, you know, a lot of these conversations I have with people, they are very, very similar. And it's not just because I tee it up or I find the people who are, you know, a plant in the audience to tell the same stuff that I say, but it's fascinating to think like, most people think that about sales, right? People who don't want to get into sales are worried that you're going to have to just force every single person across the line or else. And that's what sales is versus what you're talking about, which is more professional sales and being a sales professional, where it's about helping someone. And like you said, I love that transparency and honesty in the process. And if you can help somebody, great. If you can't, okay. And obviously the key is having a company you work for that supports that as well, right?
Yeah, 100%. And like one of the other great things about my company is like a lot of times we do walk away from deals now, but we'll come back to them later and it ends up bringing that value in the end.
Yeah, that's it's always playing the long game, right? Especially with if you have something that you're selling, like what you're doing with Starburst Data, is that's it might not be for everyone right now. At some point it might be. Some people might not be ready for it. Like you just got to play that longer game instead of like scarcity in the moment and let's get what we can get. If we're looking at the persuasion piece, what have you seen so far as the biggest challenges in persuading people and moving them forward as a customer, especially when it's a good fit?
Yeah. For my role specifically, so like I said, I'm entry-level sales, SDR, like cold outreach, a lot of it. The biggest challenge for us is like getting people to take that first meeting, that first step. And the reason why is our product can be really technical. So, I mean, I'm talking to people about like where they're accessing data, what databases are they using? Like, how are they analyzing data? Are they on cloud? Are they on-prem? I mean, one of the great things about my technology is that we connect all of those data sources together without movement. So usually a lot of these data engineers, data like architects, data scientists are moving all this data around. They call it ETL, extracting, loading, transforming it so that it's readable for your analysts or whoever needs to like risk modeling people need to access that data. But if you look across a company, data affects everybody. So nobody in marketing is doing anything without having the data to back it up. Nobody in the supply chain is ordering something without having the data to back it up or tracking where it's going and where are they going to allocate it and to what stores get how much. All of that is 100% data driven. So the biggest challenge for us is when we're reaching out to these people asking how they use data, they're like, oh, we get too technical. They're like, no, it's not for me. Like you're talking to the wrong person. You need to call a data engineer. And I'm like, no, you're the right person because when have you ever made any decisions without data? Like how long, you know? So I think for us, that's a really big challenge is like getting them to see the value and talking to us, even though we can sound a little bit technical. And so that's something that I've had to learn, especially like and pivot. Yeah, I would say that that's probably a big piece of it. And once we get that first initial meeting, then we can really uncover like whether or not it's a good opportunity. And a lot of times it is, and they want to move forward too. And sometimes it's not, and that's okay too. I've seen it go both ways.
It's fascinating because I ask this question of a lot of people. And what you highlighted, which is something that happens that most people don't realize, is where you essentially have the salesperson and the potential buyer speaking different languages, or yeah. the potential buyer being overwhelmed, usually by a lot of tech jargon or sales jargon mm-hmm. that then freaks them out or feels overwhelming. And I love how you've addressed that and realized it and, you know, scale it back to the right amount where you still sound knowledgeable. You're still a professional at what you do, like on the data side, but also not too in the weeds with the technical mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. It's cool that you said that, because that's actually something we say a lot. We need to like speak their language. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's a big thing for, you know, people in sales to always remember is potential buyers. And this is all of us right in the world as customers, whether in a business or we're ourselves, you know, at a store or buying a car, is people are generally on the lookout for salespeople, but you also have some kind of need that you're trying to fill. One of the things that salespeople do to just make their life so much harder is create this barrier and this division or the separateness, right? Which is I'm here and you're here and it's me versus you. Mm-hmm. And when somebody's speaking the wrong language, whatever it is, then it's all of a sudden it pops up and that person's like, oh, you're not like me. Oh, you're not from my industry, or you, there must be something you want because I'm feeling this certain way, versus just speaking the same language and then seeing where it goes.
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely like when I was starting out, I had to try so hard to learn the tech language. It was like learning a foreign language. I had yeah. no idea about any of that. Now I feel like a little tech expert, but I had to relearn how to dial it back because I was getting too technical and I couldn't relate. And I was like, wow, there is a fine line here.
There is, and especially with an SDR role, but even for salespeople, is there's a really fine line. And again, I think that the key is for salespeople to realize, like, who are you talking to? What level do they need you to be at? I don't believe in totally mirroring. A lot of people say, oh, you should mirror and you should meet them exactly. Like, you want to be one level up because you want to bring people up with you, but you don't want to be in a whole nother universe. Somebody needs a technical conversation. Bring in your technical person, your sales engineer. Bring in their technical person and let them have a technical nerd fest, right? But just be careful of who's having those conversations. Because again, I see that. I'm so glad you realize you need to dial it back. And then when you switch careers, like you're going to have to learn a new language at a new company or whatever that looks like. And, you know, it's just, it's always keeping it relative to the other person, which is the human you're dealing with.
100%.
So one of the other things that goes into the sales part, and I think this is fascinating, going a little bit backwards to when you said like just going for the direct ask felt wrong, like you actually physically flinched, which that would be awesome if that was like on a video somewhere and like you had that like as a future, a reference point. But it's where confidence fits in with that, right? Because if you're not confident, you're not going to be able to ask well. If you're not confident, you can also not ask for the sale in a non-asky way, whatever we want to call that, as weird as that sounds. Like where does confidence fit in for you? And, you know, was there a point when you started feeling more confident in sales, like in everything that you went through?
One of the great things about sales and one of the not so great things about sales is it ebbs and flows, you know, and I think your confidence goes with it. Like I would be lying if I sat here and said I'm 100% confident all the time. And it's just, there's no way that that's going to be realistic. I think the first time I started feeling confident in sales though, was when I was in the program and, I started competing in sales competitions as a student and, they made us like practice and like role play. And that's when I actually started like really honing in on my ability to ask questions and being audible ready and pivoting when I needed to. And learning what it meant to ask a good question. And sometimes people aren't going to understand you. And I competed in a couple sales competitions and I did really well in them, honestly. Like I placed fourth in one, I placed first in one. And that's when I started to really grow my confidence and my ability to be like, okay, like I know what to do when I'm in that setting. And like, I know how to ask a genuinely good question and I'm not going to get the answer I always think, but that's okay. Cause now I know how to pivot as well. And my current role, I came in feeling like pretty like excited and confident. And we have what we call disco calls. So these are when we do discovery calls. And that's like, I get my main job is to set those up. And usually you take them with an AE. My very first disco call, I had never seen one in real life. And I did it on my own. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was a really good call. Like, the guy was so nice. Like, he honestly was a great buyer. Like, I wish everybody was like him, gave me all the answers I needed, like made it so easy to have a conversation with. And I left that feeling so confident. And I was like, wow, I can do this job. Like, I know I can. I won't say that does not last. Like, I went through some really like hard periods where I had to learn a lot and I struggled a lot with this job. But I think it ebbs and flows, but always knowing that I can trust the process and that I know how to ask a good question. And I think that that's part of the hurdle.
I love it. That's great. It's interesting because I've seen so many people start out in sales day one, first, you know, demo, first sales call, whatever, you know, the industry is, and they knock it out of the park. And then usually they get a lot of confidence thinking that they are amazing. It's just the intersection of a really easy potential client. And then when the struggles really happen, like you keep mentioning, where sales is also really hard, then they just crumble because they just don't have that. And obviously you have the foundation going into it. And where that's fascinating from a confidence standpoint, where do you think, let's say, role-playing competitions is this weird, you know, kind of thing that's not necessarily like the real world of selling, but where those two things really did help you and made the difference with that confidence?
Yeah, I think the more you do something naturally, the more confident you're going to get at it. So you could go to the gym for the first time, and the first time you pick up a barbell and you squat down, you're not going to have good form. But the more you practice, the better your form gets. That doesn't mean that you're always going to be improving unless you're putting on like more weight and learning and growing. And I think that sales is the same. So, I mean, for me, no, role playing's not exactly like real life sales. And they always throw these wild twists in, and you know that they have a script that they have to stick to it. And that's not realistic. But what is realistic is learning how to ask good questions. Every time you walk in, a situation is never going to be the same. So you're never going to get that same scenario twice. Learning how to deal with different like buyers. So like one day I'd walk in and I'd have somebody who's so talkative, they're never going to stop talking. And I'm like, how do I reclaim this conversation?
Oh no.
Or you can walk in with somebody who's had a really bad day. They're incredibly rude. And you're like, how do I keep them and make them positive with me, or keep their interest, or make this valuable and worth their while? And so I think through that, like, the biggest thing for me was like learning, like, I had kind of faced a lot of the different types of people out there that I will in sales. And I know like now I can pivot better than I ever could before. Because if you've never tried to sell to somebody, like, how can you get through like when somebody's like, no, that's not what I said, or no, that's not going to be the right solution for me? Like, how are you going to overcome these? But since I had done it, even in a fake scenario, at least I have some kind of idea of where to go. And so I think that that actually did wonders for like me feeling like I have a great foundation to work off of, which is half the battle of confidence.
Yeah. And since sales is such a art combined with such a science, you can't predict or plan or script everything that's going to happen. So you have to have some level of just adapting and, you know, swinging at whatever life throws at you, and then, you know, making the most of it. So I think that's great. Now, I don't think this is a fair question, but I want to ask because I'm curious, which do you think is easier, selling something tangible, like when you're in the program selling golf tournament sponsorships or career fair boosts, versus intangible software as a service, data, cloud, tech stuff?
That's a good question. I'm going to pivot. Since I'm so good at that now, I'm just kidding. If I was like being like really like black and white about it, I would say selling a tangible product, in my experience, was easier. The products I was selling was a lot less value. So that's also probably.
That's why I said it's not really fair when it's like a $500 booth versus a, you know, $20,000 data migration, or just making up numbers, right? Yeah.
But I will say that in my experience too, I also feel like the time cycle matters a lot when it comes to sales, in terms of like what's easier or longer. It's harder to hold someone's attention for a longer period of time. So sometimes projects will stall out and they'll never end up closing. Also, when it's so big like that, sometimes it's hard to just get it started in the beginning or get enough buy-in. Whereas a very transactional sell, it's like shorter, you just need one person to say yes and it's done. Whereas a deal like mine, it could be like 50 people involved, maybe not usually that many, but there's easily like 10 people that are like directly impacted by this and working on it actively.
Makes sense. Nalani, thank you for being here. Super excited for this part of the conversation. Looking forward to part three, Future of Sales, for people who want to get in touch with you, if they want to learn more, if they want to chat, they just want to network with you, if they want to, you know, give you any feedback on all the awesome stuff they learned. I know that people can connect with you on LinkedIn. And also if they want to find out more about the company you work for, Starburst Data, which we talked about, which I think is exciting. Both of those links will be in the show notes if people want to. Again, Nalani, thank you for being here and sharing all this with the audience.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait for part three.
Yes. So on that note, thank you everybody for tuning in. We will catch you in part three. If you didn't, make sure to catch part one. This will make a little bit more sense. We're going to go to the future of sales next. And again, I just appreciate everyone for tuning in, for listening, hopefully taking some notes, especially from this part where it's about the persuasion and helping people persuade more effectively instead of manipulating and doing what you can to switch from sales being gross to being something effective. As always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.